This episode is brought to you by CEP Compression Australia. CEP Compression brings the user more energy, greater endurance, and enhanced performance during activities. For a discount at CEP, use the following code online, local legends in running. Welcome to the Local Legends in Running podcast, where you hear the stories of local legends in the Australian running community that you've simply always wanted to hear. In this new spin-off series, Road to Noosa, Paul Goulet, Brooke Williams, and myself, Ollie Jones, join the podcast to discuss our training leading into the Noosa Runaway Marathon Festival in May. With Brooke and I in the half and Paul in the marathon, we discuss all things training weeks, nutrition, footwear, mental strategies, and everyday life surrounding our running leading up to the event. We hope you enjoy this spin-off series from the regular Local Legends in Running podcast interviews. Let's see how we go. Cool, you guys are good to go?
Yeah, good to go.
Off the cuff?
Yep.
See my agenda there? Not that it's that full of
death. I did put the cuff there, put it off here, so yeah.
Well, welcome back to episode 2 of the Road to Noosa series of the Local Legends in Running podcast. Welcome, firstly, Brisbane North's fastest 40-year-old plus and most committed, Paul Goulet. How are you?
Yeah, I'm well, mate. Yeah. Not been doing a little bit running the last couple of weeks, but yeah, I'm just trying to take it easy right now. I've got the race on Saturday, so yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say, the week leading into the Noosa Ultra Trail event.
Yeah, I'm actually feeling quite good. I've had a couple of little niggles that have been playing on my mind a little bit, but no, over the weekend, and then today I've been feeling pretty good, so yeah, I'm just looking forward to Saturday now.
Oh, for sure. Hey, and before we continue with that, welcome to three-time, I think, Australian 10K national runner in the Zatopek Champs down south, Brooke Williams, is that correct?
Yeah. Oh, four. Done four. Didn't finish one, yeah.
Done four, DNF one. Oh.
Yeah. Thank you.
How are you going?
Yeah, good. Yeah, had a good 2 weeks. Was in Melbourne last night for St. Paddy's Day. So just recovering from that. That was fun. That was a bit of it.
So how did that look for you? What did you get up to?
My best friend, she's Irish. She's through and through Irish. Her name's Sinead and her brother's name's Connor. That's how Irish she is. So
a bit like Sinead Diver.
She was in green, loving it. We went to the last man in Flemington and it was absolutely packed. Everyone's singing along. It was like a mosh pit in there, just all these Irish people going off to all these Irish jigs, and like people were eating. Over there they have hot chips with curry sauce. Like that's a real popular cuisine.
Yeah,
that's
nice. Yeah. You get that in Scotland as well, so yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah. It was really interesting. So it was this chaotic pub, like everyone's rowdy, getting around with the Guinness and, yeah, this weird dish, but yeah. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it's good. Well, we see here, it's the 18th of March as we talk this evening on a Monday. A little bit different for us. We've recorded usually on the weekend for both our episodes and now the new series just 2 weeks ago, but it is Monday and we've got to carry on ahead with it. And it follows the weekend. And I'm trying to do research at the moment about this event that Jack Rayner and Lauren Ryan competed at too elite Australian runners, obviously both in the men's and women's, and breaking the 10K Australian records for both of them. Over in California, the Sound Running event is what I think it is called. And Jack Rayner, 27:09. I believe that's a handful of seconds quicker than he has run before. And I think over in America as well, that previous time, which was also his record for Australia. And now Lauren Ryan beating Benita Willis, 2003, 21-year-old record this year of 30:35. So they are both in ripping form.
Yeah, that's an incredible performance from her. She's had a massive breakthrough. Did you see, like, the average pace was 72s? Like, I can really do 8x400 in that pace. But, like, that's incredible. Like, what a great run. And I think she sort of, there was, like, two packs apparently in that race. I just read, because I get an email that, like, summarizes all women's running, like, news. And apparently there was, like, two packs and she was always in the front pack. And then, she was in the second pack. The Ethiopian was winning and she was way ahead. And then she caught on to the front pack and just, finished, came home really, really strong. Because I couldn't really find any footage, but apparently, that's what's happened. Someone was there and wrote about it. But, so many performances. And also, just heaps of people DNF too. Like, it was just seems like they just went for it. So it would have been so fun to watch. Yeah, incredible performance. It's 20-year-old record. Was that right?
Yeah, correct. Yep.
Yeah.
Benita in her prime back in 2003.
So Lauren would have been 5 years old.
Yeah, well, if you know her age, then yeah, probably.
Yeah, I think she's 26, yeah.
Yeah, she's still young. And it's just an amazing former runner to surpass in a very sought after event, the 10K. Paul, you didn't manage to find any footage of this event. It can be.
No, I've not actually. No, I've not come across. Obviously, just seen a lot of things on socials and things like that, like with the two times coming up. But not seen any footage.
Yeah, they actually sort of circled a NFL field. I've seen photos and found footage. I think of part of it through FlowTrack on YouTube, and it showed them. Yeah, running around this NFL field, which would be a big novelty. Brooke, I know you love the aesthetics of a running track. How do you enjoy that?
Yeah, it looked amazing. I'm just the wave light's like such a cool thing at the moment. Apparently they're going to get one in Melbourne at Box Hill. But, yeah, they set the pace to 73s, I think, to start, and then they went to 71s and then they're going to finish in 70s. Yeah, so it's going to be like a progressive. And they had set one for the Olympic standards. So they were all chasing that wave light. And apparently Lauren got onto that. She was chasing the lights at one point because she could see that qualifier that she wanted to get. Because if she got the because she won nationals, Zatopek, if she got the qualifier, it would mean that she definitely would go to Paris. So, yeah, she must have just seen that go and chased after it. But, yeah, it looks like such an amazing event. And especially because it was such a hard standard this year. Also Holly Campbell was in that race too. She's from Australia. She ran, I think she got in based on her Maury Plant 5K time of 15:10. So she was in the race too. And I think she did a massive PB in 31:40, I'm pretty sure. Because they're all chasing that qualifier now because it's 30:40. Yeah, I think they just set it up so they could run as fast as they possibly can. So massive opportunity for her. And I think the thing that's really impressive with Lauren is even last year, or 2 years ago, she was in the Bathurst cross country trials and she came middle of the pack. She didn't make the team. So she's definitely been around and she's amazing. She's been a great athlete for many, many years. But she never gave up, you know, here she is, got the Australian record. It's really hard to keep pushing like that and, you know, through all the ups and downs. And so exciting for her to have that massive breakthrough. Huge respect.
Yeah, she sort of followed a similar pathway to Kai Robinson, also a younger runner actually than her, but over in America, just sort of grinding away each year and getting faster and faster. Of course, both Aussies, and they just go under the radar being over there, I think, a little bit. And all of a sudden, you're just seeing these races pop up where they're breaking Australian records. It's interesting how you sort of don't hear about where they are before it, but then all of a sudden on social media, if you follow certain pages, you'll hear of it. It does beg the question about what we can do here in this country about potentially setting up races where they don't have to go over and travel to these areas, you know, take time off work, pay for these trips to go into these races, which arguably, yeah, are probably going to be more depth in them and quicker. But I just wonder what we could do here on home turf. What do you think, Paul?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if you guys have ever like seen on YouTube, there's an event in the UK called the Podium 5K. And they have those events, and they've got quite a stacked field. I think I don't know if I followed Jake Whiteman, Scotsman, and he I think he had a cracking run there. I think finished 13:52 for the 5K. So just even like little things like that, just the concept of putting on events that like are not only like obviously for the elite levels, but like maybe just get into more like your sort of average runners like us guys to be able to sort of go along and interact with that. And I think as well, we talk about like the Wavelight, it's not only from like the athlete's point of view, it's quite a cool thing from a spectator's point of view. Like just to sort of see, like if you're not really like familiar with what sort of paces people are running for or what sort of times they're running, just to have that little bit more interaction and see like are they keeping up with the light, are they on track, and just that little bit more engagement. But yeah, certainly things that we can be doing better here, definitely.
Yeah, I do wonder about if there's anything with Zatopek we could do in terms of bringing runners over to us to really strengthen those fields and potentially be chasing faster runners. Of course, guys like Jack and Stuart McSwain on that side and Lauren Ryan on the women's will be up the front, but how can we make them run fast here in this country? Brooke, what do you think?
Yeah,
I think
it's definitely
Yeah. No, I was just going to add that you're obviously competing like with the US, which is obviously like they've got a lot of the market there, and I think even with these times that like Jack Rayner and Lauren Ryan have just run, like you, unless you're into running, you don't find out about these things. Like running is so far down, it gets no coverage here. So it's I don't know how we go about like marketing it a little bit better, and it's how do you draw these people to come here when you're competing against the US market? Yeah.
It's definitely getting better. I remember it 10 years ago and it was nothing like it is now. Like that Moree plant meet when I went 2 years ago, I couldn't even get a seat like by myself. Like I just sit next to random people. Like it was completely packed. And it was amazing. That's exactly what it's like over in the UK. But like you said about the Podium 5K, Paul, like they do an amazing job, but that's just on road. Like they can do something like that here. And they even have like some of their best athletes in the UK that pace maybe a K because they just do loops. And that makes people run fast. Like trying to set up the environment to, make people run fast and make it exciting. I think that's key. Yeah. But also money, like a lot of those meets probably pay appearance fees and because they've got the money to do that. So, but I think it's definitely coming a long way. It's way better than it was 10 years ago. But yeah.
And you've got to think that something's got to progress now between, obviously we've got the Olympics coming up in 2032. So you'd like to think that there's some sort of build going to come in that time to try and attract more people to running events, I suppose. And
The thing too is if it's strengthened here racing wise, then we're likely to keep the runners here training wise. So they're not having to go over to America, which you get to enjoy the overseas lifestyle there, but that's very much about the running scene that they get, the depth, the coaching experience, and that's definitely increasing and improving here in Australia. But that is the other the situation here, isn't it?
Yeah, it's unfortunately just how it is. When they're all running fast, they all gather towards each other like they have to. They've got to chase the fastest in the world.
Yeah, that's right. Speaking of America, Brooke, some other results there in the females, which were pretty good to see. Kira D'Amato, a part of that, and she was fantastic last year at Gold Coast, run a 66 half marathon there, which I think was a North American record at the time and still may be. So just talk us through some of those ladies' results.
I just follow her story so much because I just think she's got a really cool story. And she seems like just someone that you would be friends with. You know what I mean? She seems like so friendly and just really chilled out. Like she was saying that she was warming up for this race, and she didn't know that you shouldn't put your gels in your spike bag because one of her spikes like busted open a gel. And so she was trying to clean like gel off her spikes before the race or something. Like she's just so chilled out like that, but she's like a professional athlete. she was one of the favorites for the US marathon trials, but I think she DNF'd. Yeah, she didn't feel good halfway or something had happened. And so she's decided that she's going to go for the 10K. So she was trying to get a qualifier to compete at the US 10K trials. So she did get the time. I think she did like a 45 second PB. And I think she didn't have the greatest lead in. Like I think she had a little injury in the lead up to that. So I'm glad that she got that. And I think Sarah Hall as well, she was one that, really worked hard towards the Olympic marathon trials, but then didn't make it. So I think she's going for the 10K as well now. So that'll be a really exciting race to watch because you've got younger ones like Carissa and what's the other one's name? They run for Bowman. So they're like, they'll be up the front, and then you've got the other ones who didn't make the marathon. They'll be there too. So I don't know when their trials are, but yeah, I just follow a bit of them. I think it's really exciting what's going to happen with them. Not sure who will make that team, but yeah.
Yeah, no, it will be interesting and good to have you on here to get the insight into the women and Australian running in the females is just running rampant, no pun intended, at the moment, but worldwide too. That marathon record too, that was about within the last year, wasn't it? That was down at like 2:13. Who was that?
Yeah. Oh, everyone's just running fast now.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's just getting ridiculous for the ladies to be running as quickly as that. But we might segue into training weeks if you guys are happy. Nothing else on the radar for big news out there?
Nah, not really.
No, I don't think I've got anything out there, yeah. No.
Sweet. Well, let's talk about ourselves then. And as always, we let the ladies first, Paul. So, Brooke, you fire away. And I know you've just come off the back of that, was it Bluff to Boat Ramp or something like that, run down in Tasmania?
Yeah, I went to Tassie. Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, it was literally just like the quickest trip. I was there less than 24 hours. So that was fun. It's weird going back 2 weeks because it feels like forever away. But, I started the Monday. So this is 2 weeks ago. I was meant to do a session, but I still wasn't feeling right because I just come off cross country on the Friday. So I got 16K in that day and did Pilates. Tuesday I did 6K on grass and then 12K on the treadmill. And then I got into strength. I said last time I was going to start getting into strength. So I started doing that.
Nice one.
Yeah. But I actually found I'm still finding it really hard to come back from this injury. It's really weird because I had COVID. And then that hit me really hard, harder than what I thought. And I actually went for a 2 hour run while I had it, and I didn't realize I had it. And I think that something just happened to me that day. Like I just really just did not feel right. But then when I was coming back from that COVID break, I just sort of jumped into a hard session straight away. I didn't sort of just jog for a few days after COVID. And then I really hit my injury hurt in my shin after that. And the shin injury has been something that's sort of been in waves over the last 6 months, which is why I thought it was a stress fracture because it was sort of coming and going. And it took me about, because I live in the country, it took me about I think it was like 10 days in total I was waiting to get in to see if it was a stress fracture. So I had that time off and I was just cross training. And this is the most time I've had off in, I think COVID like 9 weeks ago. And 7 weeks of that, I wasn't running properly like a full week. So it's been 7 weeks. And then I looked across my whole years of training. It's been the longest break I've ever had. So I just assumed that when I started after the cross trial, I'd be like, oh, sweet, I can run. You know, I don't have a stress fracture, sweet. And I started like sort of going my usual routine and paces, but my body is just like, nah. I'm trying to run and I feel like the Tin Man. Like it's so weird. I just keep finishing runs. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. It's not heart rate. It's just like my body, it feels like I need to break it in like a horse. Is that what they say for horses? Yeah. It's like I'm just waiting for it to just like break in. It just doesn't feel right. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but it's just really weird. It's just I just don't feel myself. Yeah.
Do you find that
COVID badly?
Yeah. Do you find that on like all runs? Do you find that like it's intervals and like easy long runs, or is it more one or the other?
Like when I do intervals, I actually feel better. Maybe because I'm just pushing so hard that like I just can't complain.
So it's more like, the longer, easy stuff. It's hard.
Just every other run, like jog, like I don't know. It's weird.
I've definitely had to like post the week after, but not weeks and weeks following COVID. I actually have PB'd within months of getting it on two occasions as well. So I'm not sure what's in that. Maybe it's forced rest.
Yeah, like a forced taper. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I just keep running and just hoping that it's like, I just keep running, hoping that it's just going to like pull through and I'll break in. But yeah, so I just kept running. So Wednesday I did treadmill again, Pilates for an hour. Then I did my first session back and I was at the Oval in Tokemo, the footy Oval. And I was meant to do the session I did last week. So I did like a mile, a couple of 200s a mile. I was meant to do that session. But yeah, I just got to the Oval and I was like, nah, I can't. So I just did 1 minute on, 1 minute off times 10, and then a cool down and all that. And I thought I was going pretty fast. And then I checked the pace and it was like 350s and 345s. Usually if I'm doing 1 minute, I'm going like faster than that, like 320 pace. And I really did think I was going 320 pace. So I shouldn't have looked at the times, but I did. And I was like, oh no. So I knew I had a lot of work to do after that one. On the Friday, I tried to get running, but couldn't finish. So I just did, this is after the session, 4K on the treadmill, then a little bit of cross trainer. On the Saturday, I did 12K, just easy. And then I did another session on the Sunday. So I was meant to do a tempo. I did, I was meant to do 3 by 10 minute blocks at threshold heart rate. So heart rate, the threshold for me is like 170 to 175. Maybe towards the end, it's going to like 180, 182. And I couldn't finish that either. I did 10 minutes at like 340 pace and then jumped off. I did on the treadmill actually, and then jumped off treadmill. And then I jumped back on for 5 minutes and heart rate was going really, really high. Jumped off for a minute. So I ended up doing 10 minutes, 5 minutes, 5 minutes at 340 pace. And then, yeah. But you know, when you just, you know, you're still coming back, like my heart rate was just super high. I just didn't feel good. So I was just like, oh, that'll do. That's a week done. So it was like 83K for that week. I got in the 3 strength training sessions and I got the two Pilates in. Hey, so I was happy with that. So it's,
sorry, two quick questions. That? Your heart rate, do you wear a heart rate monitor? And also, how do you know your threshold? Have you had that measured in some way before?
I feel like, so I do use the strap for the threshold efforts, but I feel like just from experience, I know that like, yeah, that's sort of my threshold. If you go, even if I just use like the 220 minus your age, I think like Garmin does that calculation. But yeah, going from like previous experience or just like having like half marathon races and stuff, like I know that around that, whatever pace I'm going around that heart rate, like, yeah, that's usually like my threshold. Yeah.
Okay. So do you use the zones at all when Garmin provides the zones live or post a run as in Z2, et cetera?
Yeah. Like, so when I just sometimes like move it down to the screen where it just shows your heart rate, and it will say that my threshold is around, I think like 167 to maybe 175. And then after that, it'll say maximum. Yeah. So yeah, I just might start out. So the first like K and a half or 2Ks, if it's like 168, I'm like, okay, good. Like I know it's going to go up. So I'm not worried about trying to push it up too high. Then I just start out pretty, you know, pretty cruisy. But then, yeah, then it'll start to go up and it, yeah, I try to hover around that. So it averages out around like 172 to 175. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, yeah. Moving into this week then, how did this week go?
Yeah, this was a bit better. I started to feel a little bit better. I did 12K easy on Monday and Pilates strength on the Tuesday, upped my weights a little bit. So I just do like a workout. My strength training is really weird. I do actually do, I know, Paul, if you've heard of it, like it's like tempo training. So I'll do like a squat, but I'll do some slower squats. And I'll do like fast down, hold, and then like slow up. So basically, this is just from my previous experience. I found I'm stronger with running if I do more endurance-based reps. So what I do is I squat for like 8 minutes, but then during that 8 minutes, I'm doing different tempos. So it's almost like resisted cardio, basically.
You're looking at
really up.
You're looking at time under tension with that. So that's what you're looking at. So
time under tension.
Instead of going heavier with the weight, you're just putting the muscle under a different stress by slowing down the tempo of the movement.
So I break like 2 minutes up into 30-second intervals, and I'm just doing different tempos each 30 seconds and then repeating. And I do that with deadlifts, but I just find it's really good to track progress too, because if I'm doing just the same thing, I can easily just add more weight to the barbell and then like use progressive overload theory.
Absolutely.
Like that. So I just use the same, and it's just easy to organize too, because I just can find a barbell. So I've been doing that and up that this week, but I find it's really good for running too, because like that's what really run, like don't they say that you have to lift 3 times your body weight when you run? Like, and I think doing that type of training, it really gets you strong, like endurance, like in the endurance way. I just feel
it
like
does,
I can handle
yeah.
if I do
yeah.
that.
And that's what you just said. You need to be able to handle. I mean, it's all right. There's cases out there and there's studies, and that might be like the ideal thing to do, but at the end of the day, your body's got to be able to handle that. So like heavy resistance training is not for everyone. Although the studies say that that is the best way to get benefit as a runner. It's not for everyone. Like I've trained different clients who just don't respond to like the heavy resistance. It just like takes too much toll on the body. They can't run after that, or just fit it into their weekly schedule. So that method you're looking at there is another way to definitely mix it up and get benefit for yourself.
I wonder if it's got anything to do with like muscle like biopsy, or like the composition of your fibers.
It also depends because obviously that develops through time. It depends on obviously what you've done through your junior years, or you might have done an awful lot of it, you might have done none. So it depends where you're at that sort of time. And
male versus female, like what the elite runners are doing. If you were to survey all a lot of the elite women and male, is it differing in terms of the one gender doing really heavy or vice versa? And
I reckon because you're looking at standards there rather than like you're looking at elite standards. So I'd imagine because those guys at the top, like no matter what the sport is, they've obviously got like the best of the best, like trainers and exercise physiologists and all this, that physios and all that looking after them. So I'd imagine like they'll, no matter the gender, they'll probably follow like similar protocols, but we're talking more sort of like your recreational runners, depending on your experience and what you've done previous. And I think there's a little bit of difference there between elite and recreational.
I think with rec runners too, like they've got to find something that they enjoy. And
absolutely,
you need to be consistent at it. So you have to find like a training method or class or whatever that they enjoy, and then they'll be consistent and get the most out of it. But I think with the elite, they have been doing it for so many years. They've had that adaption phase. So they're probably like more in a maintenance phase where it's just sort of, part of their routine and their body's like used to it. But I feel, but they're usually like the elites that I know, that they're doing like heavy lifting. They've sort of gone through that phase and they've been doing it for years.
But again, obviously you look at the overall training load as well, and say if you're an elite athlete and you're doing a heavy weight training session, you might be able to like take a lot of recovery after that. Whereas like you've got somebody who's a recreational runner, then has to go to work and might be on their feet all day, might even be sitting at a desk all day, and then they start to tighten up. So you've got to take those factors into consideration.
Yeah. That's so true. They've got the chance to nap and recover. Yeah. I'll carry on. I'm nearly done. I think Wednesday I did a 12K. Thursday I did strength again, and then I finally got that session done. I found a new place to train, which is exciting. There's not many places around here, but Cobram has this showgrounds, and sometimes I don't like training somewhere where it's like really popular, like if there's footy and stuff going on, because especially when I come back from injury, because it's not pretty. This place was like totally deserted. No one was there. So I did, mile, 4x200, mile, 4x200, and a mile with 2 minutes recovery between like the 200s, and then 30 seconds between the 200s. And I averaged 3:37 pace for the miles. So I was pretty happy with that. And then around 3:25 pace for the 200s. Yeah. So still pretty far behind from what I usually do. Like I usually do my 200s in like between 32, 34. And the miles, like under 5:30, which is like 3:25 pace. So I'm still a bit far behind from where I am, but it was a new training place too. So the grass is always a little bit slower than, say, a track. So, got that one done. I've moved my training days too. So I do a session on a Thursday now. Long run's now going to be on a Tuesday. This will break your brain. The reason I did it is because I want to race more, because I don't have a training group. I feel like I need to take up any race opportunity, even if it's like Mother's Day Classic or something. I just always push harder, you know?
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, it's probably best that I do like my threshold on a Sunday then. So then I worked all the days back, and I was like, okay, that means that Thursday's session day and long run is Tuesday. And I actually didn't mind it when I started doing it, because I get the long run done like during the week. But yeah, so I did that the
You've
last 2 weeks.
First. You've heard it here first. Don't know anyone else doing this, but carry on.
Your body doesn't know. I just worked it out. I was like, I'm guessing this is a cycle, so I'm going to do it this way. Anyway, got that done. Friday was just easy. Saturday, I got the flight to Tassie. So I was meant to race in Tassie on Sunday. And then I was going to do a run when I got off the plane. And then the flight got delayed. So we were on the runway going for it. This is Jetstar, by the way. And I left from Melbourne.
Name
and
shame, yeah.
We were literally about we were on the runway, and like we're going for it, like going really fast. And all of a sudden he just slams on the brake, right? And you know when you're like on the runway and you get to that point and you're like, it's about to lift off, and you have that mini heart attack, you're like, you don't know what's gonna happen. It was like at that moment they like slammed on the brakes, and everyone's like in the plane, it's like, what's going on? They left like a panel door open, like at the front of the, like at the front of the air, air, and air traffic control saw it and alerted them at the very last minute. So our plane got delayed like an hour and a half. And it was all good. But do you know Jackie Felgate? She's on like 3OW. I took a photo of what happened. And it made her Instagram page, so it made like the news. And I got to Tassie, had to get a hire car, and then drove from Launceston to Devonport. I was gonna run when I got back to Devonport, but I got there and like it was just so late. It was like 7:30, and you mean just like been traveling all day. I was just knackered. I was like, oh, I'll just rest. And then, had the race yesterday. Yesterday. Did a little warm-up. The race was meant to be at 9, but that got delayed too by half an hour. So I was, like, standing around. So embarrassing, like, being in your race kit too, like, as a girl, because you're, like, in the briefs and you're just standing there. Everyone's just staring. You're doing a million run-throughs. So I hated that. So that was annoying. But so I just did that as more like a training run. And I just went by heart rate again. So I actually went out really slow for that one. My first K was in like 4:20. I was going to do more like a progressive effort. Yeah. So just went out really easy. And then decided to, it was an out and back. Millie Clark was in the race and Karina Fife. So they were ahead. I could sort of see Millie a little bit because I could see around at the turnaround. And then at about, I think I'd like 5K to go, this girl heard on my shoulder, and I was like, oh. So I like pushed the pace a little bit and I started running about like 340s, like 345s, and that felt pretty comfortable. Like heart rate, I stuck within the heart rate of like 170, one, started to get to like 182 at the end. But yeah, I think I finished in 38:30 and got third. And then, yeah, I had to quickly race home. So yeah, that was really good. It was a really good event. If anyone heads down that way, it's really flat and there are like a few like undulating hills, but there's just enough, you know, when that's a course, it's like, there's just enough downhill that it goes, or uphill that it goes down. It's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's often better than just completely flat, isn't it? So.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was like one of those beach runs, like it was just really nice. So I reckon I'll definitely do that one again. And then yeah, after that had to rush home, had to go back to the hotel and then get back to the airport. So that was because we were half an hour delayed and my flight was 1:40. So I was like going mad. I was meant to write programs that morning because I write my programs Sunday mornings for my clients for the week. And I was like, I'm so sorry, I'm not going to be able to do it. I don't have run out of time. I made it to the airport and then had St. Paddy's Day. So it was pretty eventful. Wow. Eventful Sunday.
Hey, did you win any cash?
Yeah, I won some cash, yeah.
How much?
They paid for the flights too and the accommodation, which was really nice. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
I was wondering if it's more than Jetty to Jetty when we'll see you there later in the year, winning money up at Jetty to Jetty.
Yeah, I want to do that one after Kylie Minogue.
That's good. That's solid. But that's almost 4 minutes off your PB. So, a lot of factors you spoke about in there leading to that time. But how do you feel post that run? What's your reflection on that?
I think in the past, I'm sort of taking a different approach to training going forward. I think like over the last 3 years, I've almost trained a little bit too hard. Like I've just always thought like every session has to be like, you know, eyes out, super, super fast as you can go. And I think I'm starting to take more of an approach of like doing a lot of more of that threshold effort. I've actually never done much threshold at all. Like when I was coached by Mona, it was just Mona Fartlek Tuesday, quarters on the Thursday, which is like a 5K flat out interval session with like all the recoveries are like float. And then I would do sort of like a park run on Saturday and that was all out. So I never have really trained my body to do any threshold at all. So I did dabble in a little bit of it last year, did a couple of like progressive tempos, and it felt so foreign to like, you know, go at about like that, you know, 340, 335 pace instead of like 310, or, you know, a float was like 350. But yeah, so I'm just more exploring that now. So I just sort of have just been not trying to go as hard as I can from a start. I've done so many 10K races too, where I've literally run the first K in like 3:16. And if you think about that, that's like suicide for a 10K. This is a downward.
Yeah, especially if your average pace is like, what, 3:30 something?
3:30. Yeah. Yeah. And like there's a few races like Sydney 10. I just went out that fast. And then the last K was like 3:50. I just would always blow up. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So it wasn't very smart.
come Noosa half marathon, you'll drop that 80 minutes, I think, if you can get used to running, you know, firm but comfortable for longer periods of time instead
of one or
the other.
It's also more enjoyable too.
It is.
Yeah.
It definitely is.
I finished the race. I'm like, oh, this is the best. Like, this is such a nice way to finish a race.
Yeah, and I'd say you should probably finish the threshold and tempo too.
But yeah.
It's exciting though. Looking forward to you getting back to where you were though, Brooke, and we'll see how the next few weeks go. Paul's got about a minute 30 here until this kicks us out and we're back in. Kick us off, Paul. Probably a perfect time to talk about how you'd taper, I guess, for such a long event at the Noosa Ultra Trail. And this week will be that for you.
The last sort of couple of weeks, I think the last time we spoke, I had the Sunday off, which is the first time I've had a day off this year, I think. I think I had a rest day up until then. And yeah, I just didn't find the time that day, and it was a down week anyway. So I got back into the next morning. I think it was more coaching. I always enjoy that session. It was a drills and strides session. So just a good way to get the body moving, just loosen the body up, and allows you to sort of feel feel any little niggles and that you've got. And then after that, I did an easy 10, just solo and on. Then the following day, I did an hour. So this is just mostly just easy running, which takes up the bulk of my week anyway. Then the next day, Wednesday, that was an easy hour as well. And then it led me into, I think, most of it was easy running until the weekend. Again, it was easy, but I managed to get out for 3 hours that day. And that was kind of the final run before, to just dial in nutrition. I did a bit of a mixture of running on the road and through the trails. I threw in a good bit elevation in the midsection. I lapped my watch every hour, just so I could sort of see what my average pace was and what I was doing for each hour, and I was able to sort of get the legs rolling for the final hour on that run, and felt pretty good towards the end. So much so that I backed it up the following day with a 6x3 minute session, just trying to push a little bit of intensity, more mentally than anything, the following day. I always find it just when you throw in a session, it kind of breaks up the monotony of the easy runs as well. So sometimes that's just a good enough reason just to throw in a little bit of effort. And then the next week, I did 60 minutes on the Monday afternoon, just an easy run. I did an easy 10 on the Tuesday, and then on the Wednesday, I repeated the 6x3 minutes again, just a little bit sort of fresher legs, and again, just the glute was still giving me. It was my piriformis. It was pushing on my sciatic nerve. I don't know if you've ever had, if you guys have any issues with your sciatic nerve before, but sometimes if it pinches, that you just get the shooting pain that goes right down your leg. And there's a few runs where I've started in the first few minutes of the run, you could just really feel it pinching. And then warming up, I felt fine. That felt fine doing that 6x3 minutes. And then the next day, I did an easy 10. And then I did a set. I actually did two sets of hill reps on the Friday. I was a bit limited for time on the Friday morning just between clients. So luckily where I work, there's a lot of hills. So quite in close proximity. So I went out and did 5 hill reps. I think it was about 80 seconds per rep, and just an easy jog down. And then I had an hour where I was back at work training clients again. And then I went out and did another session on a slightly less gradient, but I did 8 hill reps. I think that was, they were about 1 minute reps, that one. So yeah, come through that pretty good. And then that led me into an easy 90 minutes on Saturday morning. I ran through the trails with that one. Not much elevation there. I just wanted to just get out for a run. Nice, easy plod. The temperature was actually really nice on Saturday morning. It's been cooling down a little bit in the mornings, but I know it's still going to be quite warm during the day. So,
that's like Samson Vale. That is for the people know Brisbane. Yeah. If you like Brooke and you don't, that's far north side, almost on the border of being out of Brisbane. But I've never done it, but there's a trail that really sort of winds around the lake. And I hear, there's a couple of rolling hills, but
it's pretty flat. There's not really many hills in there. There's a couple of like smaller inclines. There is one section where you can do like a few hill reps. I've done that before. You can, if you stick to the water, so you stick to the water's edge, then you can avoid most of the hills in there. So yeah, and then yesterday I went out and did an easy 10 in the morning. So and I'll just add the strength work that I've been doing. I've probably been averaging 5 sessions a week where I've just been doing 20 minutes each day. I've mentioned that the last time where I just find that sort of 20 minutes. I am lucky because I'm based in the gym, so I tend to just focus on like single leg work during that time. So I've managed to, and just keep on top of the little niggles, sort of a bit foam rolling, a bit stretching. And yeah, like I say, I'm feeling pretty good. So this week, I think I started off this morning with the coaching again, which was good just to get the body moving. And I did an easy 30-minute jog afterwards. So that's really, I'll plan a session on Wednesday this week. I'll just like, yeah, just something to get the legs moving a little bit. But mostly just an easy jog and yeah, prepare for Saturday.
Do you track your strength training? Like, do you, how do you progress your strength training?
So I do, yeah. I tend to find I just use Strava quite a lot. I usually just keep those things private. Sometimes I'll share it, things like that, but I more just put it on there just so I've got a log of it myself. I'm quite old school. Even when I'm training clients, I like to write things down. So I do use an app to log for some clients, but most of the time I write down a notebook, and that's what I tend to do for myself. I just find it's easier because it's like right there and then. I tend to find if I'm using like something like Strava, I then have to try and either like quickly jump on my phone to write it down, log it in, or remember at the end of the session, like I might be sitting at night having dinner and like, oh, trying to remember exactly what I've done. Whereas if I just write it down, pen and paper right there and then, it's easy enough to manage it, to log it. So
yeah.
In terms of like what I've done the last few weeks, it's been pretty much the same sort of routine. So I've not really logged it as such, but when I go through like a heavier strength training block, yeah, definitely
tracking
keep track
it. Yeah. I think like the training program and having it written down is good because it's like a small snapshot. Like if your writing's like really small, you can just look at 1 week right in front of eyes. You're not trying to scroll it on Strava, or you know what I mean? I know Strava's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fine line with tech. Obviously technology is like so good. Like you've got it there in the palm of your hand. But yeah, like you say, if you know you did a session like last Tuesday, you could flick back in a notebook and find it a lot quicker than you would like scrolling through.
Yeah. And sometimes it's almost too much info, like on Strava, like there's so many details about splits and stuff, but sometimes it's nice just to have like, I average this pace, and then you can kind of look over the weeks and go, oh, I did that pace back then during that block. Like sometimes that's the only data you need, and you can look back a couple of weeks, so I was starting to average that pace. Yeah. Doesn't need to be so much data all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Paul, so how you feeling? Sorry, Brooke, you go.
No, you go.
I was just saying, just over 2 months ago, you were hitting up to 160K, and that's definitely come down. I just lost you for a second on Strava. 137 about a month ago, and then had that down week of 75, then 110, 80, and you're now at 10, obviously, for this week.
Yeah, I think, again, like the last time we spoke, like that was when I had penciled that in as a down week, doing the 75K that week. And that was after coming off the race. I raced the trail event, SEQ Trail Series at Bunyaville. And I feel like that took quite a lot out of me. Like, I wasn't really race fit to be able to go and have a proper crack. I'd say it's fun. Was it fun? I'm not really sure. But it was really, really tough event. I kind of pulled up a little bit tender after that. So it was always a plan to have the down week and then try and build the K's back up if I could, which I managed to do like 110 the week after, and then just dropped it down to 80. But I was probably at that stage where when I was doing the like 150, 160K weeks, I was starting to really feel quite tired. Even like when I dropped it off to 75, doing the 110, I was just like, nah, I need to focus here on like recovery and just dropping this. And I've got to now and I actually feel really good. So it's definitely like paid off to drop it back and have a good taper leading into Saturday. So yeah, I'm feeling pretty good now. I'm feeling like, you know, that sort of feeling you get, you're just sort of jumping at your skin and you're been preparing for an event and you just want it to happen. That's kind of how I'm feeling now. So yeah, let's see what happens on Saturday. It's a long way.
That's good. Well, I'll get into my week. I've got Strava up here as well again for me. I had the weirdest week, like halfway through, towards maybe Thursday, Friday, I was actually further through the week than I'd realized. So, which I never do. I'm quite meticulous with tracking it. Not so much planning it, but definitely tracking it to get to 70 to 80K. But yeah, by the weekend, I was pretty much bang on 70K. I thought it was 60K. That made things a little bit different. But let's backtrack. So I rode to work Monday morning, but then had run home 6K. That's just the easy commute back home. And then again, the morning back to work. What I really loved this week was did like some threshold reps on Tuesday. And like Brooke was saying, it wasn't a flat out session, but just again, warmed up about 3K to work and then straight into threshold pace to feel. And then, I mixed that up. This was a 5x1K threshold in the afternoon. That was later in the week. I did it again. So this one I actually had the normal cross country cancelled. We had our in-house school cross country during the day. So they cancelled the session for the boys in the arvo, which meant I had a free afternoon. I was very, very excited. So let me tell you the truth about what happened. I head down to the track and did about 3K warm up, but had planned 5x1K with 2 minute rest. So pretty generous for threshold pace because you're not smacking them out. And just again, try to hold 130 laps. And all I do for that is literally just look at the watch as I get to the 400 or starting mark. And it's surprising if you just keep doing this and doing this, how often I see 129, 130 or 131 or 128. And I just sort of adjust it on the next rep without even looking at it until I get back to that point. And again, I'm seeing between sort of 128, 129, 30, if not slightly slower, but on the quicker end was promising. I spoke a couple of weeks back about being closer to almost 350 pace for the thresholds. And now it's sort of 344. But Paul, you'd agree that the drop in temps and humidity, even though slight, it's just marked on how you feel, hey?
It's 100%. Like I say, like Saturday morning there, you could just really feel still a little bit humid, but the temperatures are themselves are just you're dropping, and you definitely feel that difference. Makes it feel a lot easier.
Yeah,
you
it's
feel
crazy.
Like you'd be able to breathe better. Yeah, like you can just. Do you feel like you can breathe better?
Yeah, you do feel that, but it's almost like you're just running along, and you can almost feel that coolness on your skin as well, and it just so much nicer than the what we've experienced the last few months.
Oh, for sure. I actually had a thought during that threshold, like your breathing rate is a very, very intrinsic and important sign of how your threshold is traveling in that moment. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just a tip to those more newer runners to the sport or who are wanting to have one measure of tracking threshold, that's one of them is your breathing rate should be like, you should be able to have, a few sentences of conversation, probably not a long conversation, nor should it be hard enough that you can only sort of yell out one or two words, if that makes sense, like really controllable, but it's obviously higher than if you were jogging or stationary. Next day in the afternoon, just got out for an easy 10K around campus. There's actually a few trails, a certified cross-country course. I didn't mention that 2 weeks ago on the Nudgee College campus now, which is host to both student events, but also opens as well. It's been some pretty quick local runners over that in various ways and some relays run. So it's pretty interesting. And then they've got about five ovals, which just have pristine grass year in, year out. So they are awesome to roll across. And then, Thursday mornings, I join a weekly staff run in the mornings, but I run to it. And the staff run is about 6 or 7K. And then I commute about, six myself and then potentially add on as well. So I got 14K out of that in the morning. And then again, just ease in the afternoon. So covered 20K across the day. All pretty much easy, 5:20 pace in the morning and 5:15 in the arvo. But it got me thinking to you guys, how important do you reckon it is? Like if I was to cover 20K broken, like in a double versus 20K straight, and then decide not to do a long run on the weekend, do you think that would be a detriment to not have the body experience just one block of running for 20K, for example?
I think, there's a lot of sort of studies there as well. Like, I've always sort of followed the, like, doing it in one session is better, because you could look at it, say you could do, like, 20K and you might break it into two lots of 10, or you might do 2 hours and break it into, like, two lots of 60 minutes each. But you're obviously, again, it depends on obviously what you're doing between that time. So if you're doing, like, 60 minutes in the morning and then 60 minutes at night, if you've had a lot of recovery during that time, if you've had a stressful day, like that 60 minutes at night is probably not going to be as stressing on the body as it would be like the second 60 minutes, like back to back for the 2 hours, if that makes sense. So yeah, I'd always be a believer of doing like the longer, like one run, so a 20K run as opposed to like two lots of 10. So yeah,
agreed.
I honestly think it depends on the person. Like, because I've done some research and apparently, like, mileage is king. Like, if you, it doesn't matter, like, whether you're doing 6K at night, 6K in the arvo, if you're doing 12K for that day, like, that's the main thing that's going to get you forward. And I think that, like, if someone comes to me and there's like, and they're like, I can't do a long run, but I could break it up. And they can do that consistently in their lifestyle.
You mean logistically, like, yeah.
That's when it's different for every person, you know what I mean? But then you think about the theory with the long run, like how they say that you do need that extensive time on the legs for the event that you're training for. So I don't really know. I guess there's like two ways.
It is. I think you're spot on as well, Brooke. Again, it comes down to the individual and where they can fit it into their routine, their lifestyle. So yeah.
Yeah, I still think ideally, if you're able to take that load and do it in your weekly life, that doing it straight is ideal. But yeah, I'm just thinking I can load up the weeks massively, particularly Tuesday and Thursday with coaching and running with my voice to hit about 20K on 2 days. But that's my long run length.
I think it's different 60K as well.
Within three runs, and I try and hit 70 to 80. So there's not much room after that.
If you're splitting your runs up as well, it's different if you're doing like an easy run in the morning, then an interval session in the afternoon or vice versa, then yeah, it's good to split it up. Yeah. But,
yeah. 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 But, yeah, so yeah, next good, morning good was where I started one. With. Yeah. Before another threshold. So a double threshold for the week. But yeah, I mixed up the day. So Friday I rolled into work at 3K, then went into the threshold pace. Done this before. I think I did this on the podcast 2 weeks ago, 2 by 10 minutes. At the half marathon pace. And this was again around that like 3:45 pace. And not as comfortable as Tuesday, but yeah, it's slowly becoming a bit more comfortable and measurable in the sense that I'm hitting again that start line, and it's that 1:30. It's rolling across on the watch. But interestingly enough, there was a table set up there for some triathletes who are actually measuring their threshold. That's why I asked earlier, Brooke, with the lactate. Threshold testing. So that was interesting. And then later on that evening, I saw Matt Hansen, another Burt runner now running over there in America, actually, he posted a short video that these guys had made about their testing with all the music, and they had their dog there. And
I've seen the great, what's the name of the company that are doing that? Because I've seen a bit of that floating about on social media.
Yeah, no idea. But I know, I know that Rebound Running Club, there's a guy there.
Yeah, right.
Kent
yeah.
Bahari.
Right.
He runs that group, I think, has done a bit with that. I'm not sure if these are the guys you're thinking of. I'd never seen them, probably because they are triathletes. Introduced myself very quickly, but it was towards the end. They were finishing.
Yeah,
just halfway through, so I had to get on to the next 10 minutes. And, just very manageable, like so confident in this pace. Now, like 3 weeks ago, the week before I spoke to you guys, I know we can be picky on ourselves, but it did not feel fit, so to speak, for where I wanted to be. And yeah, it just takes that time. I'm so pumped up for these temperatures to drop further.
Yeah.
It looks like they're not at the in the near future. If I bring up the forecast, we have 20 still. Oh, the maxes are dropping for sure. And I'm seeing a few 19 degrees, but yeah, 19 to 26 come next week.
Yeah.
That should be good.
It's going to be nice.
As
long
and
as you're
then,
out early enough, you're good.
yeah, yep. Yeah, Friday afternoon had our first cross-country meet for school back on the home, old home turf at Churchy, East Brisbane, south of the river. Yeah, that was interesting. They're not sort of, they're just like preparation meets, like individually to find out where they're at, practice, pacing and racing, as opposed to sort of saying who, which school is the best. But we fared pretty well. And yeah, good to get out there again, seeing how the kids are traveling. The states are on at the moment, or were over the weekend anyway, for athletics, which took a few runners out. And then I've had this sort of virus. Just a mild virus in the back end of last week, cold wise. And then we've had this stomach thing going on where it just feels like, I don't know, you're sort of hungover or something. The stomach's churning and
Oh,
like
no.
it's a bottomless pit. You keep eating and it's still not comfortable. Yeah, nothing like vomiting or anything like that. It's not gastro, but yeah, that's just sort of happened over the weekend, which, yeah, by the fact I'd loaded up the week already, Saturday off, easy seven in the Arvo, 7K on Sunday. And then had today off. So if that happened earlier in the week, I couldn't have done that. But because I had, yeah, covered only 7K across 3 days, but I'll still hit the mileage. So it's good how it can work out like that sometimes.
Yeah, that's good. Oh, I hope you feel better.
Yeah, it's yeah, I don't know what's going on, but I think we're on the mend. And yeah, about seven, I just, all I needed was 7K to hit that 75 mark again. Yeah, I'd done some work on Monday, as in some running work and extra on Wednesday, which, yeah, made up that 10K extra that I sort of was not thinking about later in the week. So, yeah, happy with 75 again. About 2 months, I think, of 75 and one off week where it was my son's birthday. So, I had the morning off and then subsequently the day off cleaning up the house after his party. So, I thought that was fair enough as my one down week, so to speak,
Yeah.
in the last couple of months. So, looking forward to just continuing in this way. And it also got me thinking about the fact that I'm just never sore these days. I'm rarely sore after any run, which I think is a very good measure that I think you're doing things okay. What do you guys reckon?
Feel like I'm always sore.
I think I'm maybe somewhere in between then, so
Yeah, but you're running a heap, and Brooks, what you've gone through a heap in the last couple of months, COVID and injuries and working out
Yeah,
different training
two ups and
methods and
downs.
things. So
Yeah.
you're running in jogging in like Saucony Pros. What's going on there?
What? Yeah, I do.
They're a
In
super shoe.
2020,
You're wasting the been
I
wasting
can't believe
money.
I'm
They should be
exposing
on the road
myself.
for flat, fast runs.
In 2021, I run every single run in the Vaporfly. I'm not
Oh
kidding.
my goodness. Let's get to
Because I just
footwear though.
loved
This is a
it.
great segue. It's on the list, and I think we're going to have to cut probably the nutrition part of it for this
Yeah.
week, because I want to talk about to you guys what you are wearing, and Brooks sort of hinted towards her lack of variety and I don't know, interest in the super shoe for everything, and Paul's obviously out on the trails too, so how that would vary. But yeah, let's keep with Brooke. What's your rotations at the moment are leading into Noosa in every run you do? Is a Vaporfly now a thing of the past?
Actually, my husband and I have the same size shoe. So I've got heaps of rotations and he like is right into running shoes. So he's got a bit of everything. But I've actually gone away from the Vaporfly. When I reckon when they changed it, I liked the old one, the one that was around like 2022. I don't know what number it was.
That was a
But
two.
I used to like that one. Yeah, the two. The three is not for me. I think that's a thing. That's the shoe that actually I got it for Christmas and I reckon that was a shoe that hurt my shin. The
Yeah,
foam
right.
just felt different. Yeah, so I've gone away from the Vaporfly, but yeah, Riley had the Saucony. What's it called? I don't even know the
Endorphin
name.
range and pro's the carbon plated super shoe.
Yeah, so I had a pair actually, and then he had a newer pair. So yeah, I've been using that one. I like that one because I think there's more of a rocker than the. Or it just feels like it rolls way better than the Vaporfly or the Alphafly. I feel like that Vaporfly and the Alphafly, they sort of have a really aggressive, like, when you hit the ground, you know what I mean? Like, it just, I don't know, like, it just doesn't have the same response.
I definitely found like the difference between the Vapor 2 and the Vapor 3. Like I didn't enjoy the Vapor 3. That's what That's the shoot I've got at the minute. I ran my last marathon in the Vapor 3, and I don't think it's like designed to run that far. I think it's maybe more designed for like a 5, 10, maybe a half sort of type thing. But yeah, there's definitely like not as much a rocker or response, I reckon, to the twos. The twos were by far my favourite, and I just cannot get my hands on a pair of twos anywhere.
Oh.
Yeah, it's saddening, isn't it, when you find a shoe you love?
Yeah,
and I'll talk about some of mine soon, but you just can't get them back once they upgrade that next model, hey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with the Vaporfly though. I feel like it's more of like a road mile shoe now. Like you could use it for like, or like in doing a short fart like that's like 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah,
so
yeah, you
that's
could,
it. Because
yeah.
there's just, there's no longevity in it. And I feel like you just can't, you can't get rolling.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's pretty much all I've been running in. And I do have a pair of New Balance, but yeah, been using that Saucony one. I love it. It's good.
All right. How many pairs of shoes would exist in your house, Brooke?
Oh, I'm looking over at the moment. I don't even know. Like maybe like 25. Yeah.
Wow.
Don't know.
Yeah,
you beat me there. I might beat you in variation, but yeah, let's get to Paul. He's the one on the hills too and the gravel a lot. What are you in, mate?
Yeah, so I think what we're running right now, I've got two pairs of trail shoes that I've been rotating through. The ones that I'll probably use for the event on Saturday are the Hoka Mafate Speed 4, I think they are. Yeah, actually, I got them. I ran. There was an event last year called the Untamed Border Run. It started in a place called Killarney, which is just on the border of Queensland, New South Wales. So yeah, I ran the event there, and yeah, I actually really enjoyed those shoes. I picked up a pair of Saucony Endorphin Edge at the start of this year.
The Edge.
Not pro. So the Dolphin Edge are,
oh, they're the trail shoe,
carbon plated trail shoe. And I think I made the mistake in not getting fitted for them. I just like assumed it's like, yeah, I'll get the normal size that I get. And I think I probably went a half size too much in them. And yeah, I've never really taken to them. So they've kind of quickly came in and then back out of rotation. So I actually just, some of the easy runs, I actually just use the like Invincibles, like when I'm in the trails. I find like, yeah, using a road shoe in the trails is fine. Particularly if it's not too technical. So
yeah, exactly.
How do you find, sorry,
yeah,
the trail shoe with the, that's a super shoe, how does it differ? Like, does it have more tread?
Yeah, it has a little bit more tread, but I do find, I mean, that's obviously the biggest difference, but I do find that it doesn't provide as much tread as what the Hoka does. That's why I probably prefer the Hoka over the over the Saucony. But again, that's probably just I know heaps of people that run in the Sauconys, and they would say they're like best sort of trail shoe going out there. But yeah, I'll definitely favour the Hokas more than the Saucony. So yeah. But yeah, in terms of speed shoes, like I've been doing a few workouts. I've got an old pair of Alpha Flies that I still sort of use now and again. Never really taken to the Alpha Flies, only bought one pair. I was always preferred the Vapors, so I've got the Vapor 3s still in rotation there as well for some of the quicker stuff, but not been an awful lot quicker stuff recently. And yeah, just daily shoes. I've got a couple of pairs of Nike Pegasus as well, so tend to favour Nike more than anything. I've just kind of fallen into that Nike rut over the last 4 or 5 years, and just trying to branch out a little bit, but yeah, still certainly stuck in that Nike. Nike's got me wrapped around their finger. So
that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's kind of what I'm using at the minute. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. For me, about 10 years ago, I saw a podiatrist under the Gabba in Brisbane. QSMC. There's a shout out for them. Nathan Eady, his name is, a very well renowned podiatrist who said I had flat feet and overstrided, and said, go and buy yourself some Brooks Ghosts. And I did. And I was in them for about 9 years. Fit orthotics very well, very durable, high heel to toe gradient, about 12 mil. So counteracted the shin splints I was suffering as well in my mid-20s coming back to running, and always had it through school actually too, to the point I was taking Voltaren tablets like before any run, which was pretty bad to rely on as a runner. But just for the first time, this, and that's my jogging shoe, by the way. I should have said that to start with, but now I have. I've tried the Brooks Glycerin, which is their other jogging shoe, but it's a bit more poppy. And I went to the shop and I said to the guy at, another shout out again for Brooks at DFO, that he said, I wanted something to sort of model a bit more like the super shoe feel, where you get that kind of energy and pop off the ground. And the Glycerin hasn't got it exactly, but just, yeah, a bit more. The Brooks just feel a bit dead now to me after wearing the super shoes in the Sauconis now, but the Glycerines have been fantastic, fit the orthotic well. And yeah, to go into a different type of Brooks, I thought was very impressive to go to that. But otherwise, I rotate a lot, and even do it as an adult at my coaching and my sessions, and the boys always wonder what's going on. But I tell them that I start with my Ghost or Glycerin now, and I get into my, on the grass, the Speed 2s and Pro 2s in the Endorphin Saucony range are fantastic. They're flatter. They're quite a narrow shoe. When it went from the 2s to the 3s, they got like larger. I'm not sure if Brooke, if you wore the 2s, but they're a larger shoe. I think even though they were lighter, they were a larger. If you look at them from behind or on top, there's just more to them. So they're great on the grass, and I wear them for short reps. It's still the Pro 2s. They have the carbon plate and nylon in the Speeds. But now the Pro 3, I've been in for about a year or maybe 9 months. I got them just before Gold Coast last year, so I was too nervous to wear them in for that event, but since have worn them in a few events, and I'll probably be in them for Noosa. Just a white version of the Saucony Pro 3s, which I did wear in the Bolt at the end of last year. Still, my PBs are in the Pro 2s for both the 5 and 10K, and Saucony Speed 2s was my half marathon PB at Gold Coast last year.
There you go. Yeah, it's a good shoe. It rolls well.
Yeah, really, that rocker on them. Yeah, the Pro's just a bit firmer, great on the road. Yeah, and I guess, yeah, to finish with that, any threshold work, I use the Speeds. And in the Pros, very rarely the 3s, just for races really, and those really like the longer, faster reps, otherwise in the Pro 2s. And just rotate about 4 or 5 pairs of those in the week.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I've never actually tried a Saucony. Like, obviously just the trail shoes I've got there, but I've never run in the Pros or the Speeds. It's always been something I wanted to try, but sounds like I need to get a pair.
Well, I can't talk for any other shoe, but I can talk these up for sure. Because I didn't run in super shoes until about maybe 3-4 years ago, because I was just so anxious to get out of these orthotics in the Brooks Ghost, which are pretty much volume shoes. So I was racing in them, which just seems crazy now, but going across to them, it, you instantly notice the feel, and probably most super shoes now anyway, where you get that rocker feeling, that return, and get just more cushion underfoot, I guess, generally in a lot of these shoes now.
It is so hard to go back to like your sort of conventional shoes after like being in a pair of super shoes, isn't it? It's just, yeah. And now the market is just saturated with super shoes, isn't it? So, and they're not cheap either.
Oh, it's remarkable.
No. I wish you could like try them all though. Like, I wish there was a place where you could, like, you know, you could just try them all on and run.
Yeah, not be some weirdo that wants to try everything in the shop and take everybody's time up.
Yeah.
And actually so get amazing. Able to run in them.
Yeah. But everyone, like, they're all getting, I think, pretty similar now. But yeah. I think the Saucony, they're on the money there. They're doing something right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There's one shirt, but take that on board if you're listening in. Let's finish with a listener question. It comes from a staff member at my school. Her name's Jamie. She's a cross country director here at Nudgee College. She organises all these things like the Friday practice meet that I spoke about earlier. But she asked about HRV. Now, I've got to be honest with you. I saw that and I thought, what is HRV? Searched it up. It's heart rate variability. Obviously, I've never looked at it. But what I found was it was like how your heart rate varies, say, within a minute. It might be, you all might be sitting here at 70 BPM, for example, but within that minute, there might be variation to it, but then also how that varies when you're running, I think is her question. I hope I don't have that wrong. What do you guys know about that?
I used to have the Whoop band. Do you know the Whoop band is a band that measures HRV majority. And I used it for a couple of months, but I found that it was great. Like, so really just measures recovery because it measures how long you're spending in your parasympathetic nervous system and your synthetic nervous system. So I think it's like if the beats are longer, that means that you're in your parasympathetic nervous system. And then that's how they measure how rested you are after activity. So I feel like it was good to, like, if you're gonna thinking about using it or anything like that, I feel like it's good to, because you learn your body and like what makes the HRV go down. Like for me, it was things like not eating after 8 p.m. I noticed that the next day my HRV was way better. Was it more in the green? Or like alcohol was a massive one. It would go into red if I even had like one glass of alcohol. So I think it's like really good, good feedback. But I feel like with all kind of trackers, there are also like the mental negative side to it. Like there were plenty of times where like I knew that I was going to be in bad HRV and wake up in red. And I just like, there was even one morning I just like ripped the thing off and threw it because I was just like, I'm tired. Like, I know I'm tired. I don't need an app to tell me I'm tired. Yeah. So yeah, I think it's a really, it's a good tool to have to just learn your body and learn like how well you are recovered. And there's also other things that affect that parasympathetic nervous system that you don't really think of, just like general work stress or like rushing around. And yeah, so yeah, that's what I learned. That's what I know. That's my experience with HRV is there are forms of measuring it, and it's a good tool to just learn your body and what certain things can affect it. Yeah.
Yeah, Paul, any experience with HRV?
I don't actually. I'm glad that Brooke was able to go into a bit of info there, because I've known a couple of clients or a couple of people that just within the running community that have done it, but yeah, I don't have really any knowledge on it. So yeah.
Yeah, well, I'll see her tomorrow and ask her. Yeah, she's a triathlete, so one day she's tracking it on her watch. Is there any background there further in triathlon? Because yeah, we're all fairly experienced runners, and we all know about heart rate and track it, but heart rate variability is something that was quite new.
It's
to me
been
reading
quite
that.
A buzz. Been quite a buzz lately. Yeah. I think it's worth, if she's like, you know, she's really committed triathlete. I think it pays off to just find a tracker that works for her and to spend time just learning a little bit. But I feel like it's something you don't really need long term. Like I feel like you start to notice trends, and it's usually just the stuff that people would recommend to stay healthy anyway and recover better. Like, you know, don't eat too late, or don't, you know, eat bad, or don't stay up late, make sure you get enough sleep. Like it pretty much shows you all of that anyway. So yeah, I reckon it's definitely valuable, but I don't think it's something you really need. Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. Hey, we're about to finish this up here. So appreciate your time this evening, guys. And we'll check back in 2 weeks. Good luck to Paul in the, Ultra Noosa run this weekend.
Yep.
And Brooke and I will continue hoping for consistency as the next weeks progress. So looking forward to that. Thank you again.
Perfect.
See ya.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Thanks.
If you enjoyed listening to this episode or the Local Legend in Running podcast in general, please jump on Spotify, give it a rating. I'd much appreciate it. Thank you.